Dadsnet Original Podcast.
Welcome back to the Dadsnet Podcast with me, Al. Obviously, JK is not here for another interview. He doesn't really like doing these, but never mind. On the show today, we've got someone even better. We're welcoming another phenomenal guest who will no doubt be able to offer some help to any single dads or mums listening. It's Paul Brunson, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. But yeah, your part, how many times has your partner missed a pod episode? How many times?
I'll throw him under the bus here. I don't think he's done an interview in 2024.
Oh my goodness.
And we're up to about 12.
Oh my goodness. How does he still have a job then? How's he still working?
I know. It does the other bit. So the way we do the podcast is like 1 week we have a celebrity interview, okay. And then the next week we do like more of a community, Dadsnet community kind of conversation around funny stories that people have sent in or whatever. He does turn up for those ones in his of his defense. So right, he's like 50% of a host, basically.
All right, fair. He's a part-timer.
I'm going to call him that. That's exactly what I'm going to lead with. Paul, I must also, like, a full disclosure here. My wife and I are absolutely obsessed with Married at First Sight. We can't get enough of it. It's phenomenal. We just love it.
Oh, man. I love that you said the two of you are. Right? Because I think what is the coolest thing about this project, Married at First Sight, to me is that you have couples who are either been in a relationship for a long time or just met. They watch the show together and then they talk about what's happening. And oftentimes they have different opinions. But the fact that they're having that discourse, different opinions, talking about relationships, come up with some type of, you know, resolution to their discussion, that by itself is therapy. Because therapy is healing. So it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. Like there's moments where, you know, the couple are sitting on the sofa and they've got yourself and the other two experts on, by the way, I've got a mega soft spot for your other two co-celebrities, celebrity crush. Let's not go down that road. But, I sit there with my wife. They're on the sofa there, and when you guys are kind of talking to the woman of this relationship, and I can feel like similar traits to things that my wife does. Mm. I'm sort of sitting there going, "Are you listening? Because this is you,
right? But I'm sure she's saying." Are you listening? Because this guy is you.
Yes. All the time. No, we love it. It's a great show. It must be doing really well. Obviously, there's the Australian one, UK, US. So it's doing pretty well.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I mean, we're filming right now. The one that will air at the end of this year, end of 2024. We're filming right now, and it's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. It's an entirely different set of contributors. It will be our best series by far.
Amazing. And on top of filming, you just released a book, correct? Like, Find Love, which sounds like everyone needs to read it.
Everyone needs to read this, really. I mean, this is about 10 years of research has gone into this. I had probably about 8-9 of close friends of mine who are researchers. One, Dr. Terry Orbuck, she leads the longest long-range study on couples in the world. So I had lots of contributors on this one. And it's about not just finding love, but it's about how do you identify the right partner? And then how do you keep that partnership? And then also, when is the right time to step away from the partnership? So it's about all of those things.
It's incredibly powerful. Like I think when like as a dad, as a parent, you know, and the guys that we speak to, the relationships that we have with our immediate family, you know, our spouse, our partner, and our kids, they are the most important relationships that we have in our lives. Even when you think about like I think about my parents, actually they're in the periphery now. You move as you grow older, as you have your own family, they move away in terms of that relationship. And now it's all about my wife and the kids. And I guess my question here is like, how do people balance those two things? Because we read a lot of dads' comments and posts where they've come in and they've basically said that both mum and dad have just been all about the kids. Like they've been nurturing that relationship and not nurturing this relationship. And that they believe is why they're struggling to keep the spouse, the mum and dad relationship together, or the dad and dad, or mum and mum.
Yeah, this is a very important question. And there are many pieces to unpack in this, right? So the first is that we have to acknowledge that the relationships that we have today are much different than the relationships that our grandparents had, or that our great grandparents had, or that our parents even had. Mm-hmm. Think back to just say maybe the 1970s, right? A lot of your listeners might have been born in the 70s or born right in the 80s. The 70s, only about 50 years ago, in the UK and in the US, there was only one acceptable form of relationship. And then in just the 1970s, what was that? Heterosexual, marriage, monogamous, long-term, no divorce, right? That was it. That was the only acceptable form. Today, fast forward 2024, you know how many acceptable forms of relationships there are? Countless,
yeah.
Endless, endless, you know, endless forms of different forms of relationships. So that presents a large difference between today and our parents or grandparents' generation. And then also our parents and grandparents, I think about my grandmother, grew up in Jamaica, what we call the bush within the bush. So super small town. She literally had about 8 options for a husband. And wow. 5 of those were her cousins. You know what I mean? So it's like that's all she had. Whereas, and also when she was choosing, or should I say she wasn't choosing, because we're still deep in the patriarchy, but then deeper in the patriarchy. So you had the man choosing. Was he choosing for a partner that could bring him intellectual stimulation and sexual stimulation and could be a great co-parent? No. It was very pragmatic. You wanted to have a partner who could help to hold down the household, raise some kids. That was it, right? You fast forward to today, 2024, what are we requiring out of a partner? Everything. We want someone who's going to be a great co-parent. We want someone who's going to give us that intellectual stimulation. We want someone who's going to be a best friend. We want someone who, when we get home at night, they're going to be doing backflips in the bedroom, right? We want all of these things. So we're demanding more. So to the point of what a lot of your listeners were saying is they're right, is that they didn't necessarily see relationships, behaviors, and traits as we see them today, because it was a different society. We live in an entirely different society. And as a result, the demands on our relationships are different.
And is that a good thing? Like, because when we think about that ideal partner or that ideal relationship, and as you were talking about, oh, we need them to tick all of these boxes, that's bloody hard to do, yeah. Especially when you've then got the pressures of kids and work and whatever else you've got going on in your life. So are our expectations on that relationship kind of a bit skewed at the moment?
Yeah. This is one where it's a yes and no. I don't think it's a specific. And here's the reason why. One is just to even back out and look at the full context. What we're talking about here is just happening in the West. You know, I think a lot of us who live, like we live in London or you live in New York, you kind of think that the world is like everything that's happening in your city is what's happening in the world. But no, we're just a little drop on the entire world. So when you look at the West, or what are called weird areas, Western, educated, industrialized, rich, democratic, we show up much different. Our focus is on individualism versus collectivism. And the majority of the world are collectivists. So one is just realize that we're experiencing things that the entire world is not experiencing. That's one. Secondly, is to your point, when you look at the research within the West, because of this focus that we have on finding the ideal partner, super high expectations on our partner, we have lower satisfaction in our relationships than ever before. There's a researcher, Eli Finkel, out of New York, one of my favorite researchers. He wrote a great book called The All or Nothing Marriage. His research shows that 80% of marriages have lower satisfaction today than ever before. And it's largely to your point, because this expectation level is so high. But 20% of these marriages have higher satisfaction than ever before. And it's also because of the expectation, because when you set higher expectations, two people have high standards, they typically have a higher quality, right, of life. And then there's also more tools. So that's why it's a yes or no. The majority of relationships less satisfied because of what you're saying, but there's a small percentage that are even more satisfied.
So effectively, what we're saying is that if you get it right, it's better than it's ever been, but it's harder to get it right.
That's a great summary. I'm going to use that. Can I use that?
Put it in your book.
That's in the next book.
If I hear that on the new season of Maths, right, I'm going to go wild.
I love that. You put that so succinct. That was great.
Oh, I'll say to Jen, she's not my wife, I'll be like, I said that. That was me.
Oh, man.
Brilliant. Oh dear. No, I like that. And I think as well, like there's an adjustment in our minds, and I think it's conscious. It has to be conscious, an adjustment in our minds to frame those expectations in a slightly different way. And I'll put that in a practical example, because another topic that comes up all the time is dads coming in, and I only see the dad side of this, so I can't speak. I don't know whether mums are also saying this. They might be, but I don't know. But dads are certainly saying that sex dries up. Like when you have kids and you're stressed from work and your kids are like up late and up early and there's no time, sex dries up. And dads then come in and they say, well, I don't get any sex. Like how do we reignite this kind of sex life? And I think, like, again, it's about reshaping the expectations. So that's my next question about sex life, because it comes up all the time. But are our expectations, or do we need to hold it slightly differently? I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So one thing, though, just so you know, my take on this is expectations are definitely are very high, right? But I think the larger reason why we have the issues on the back end, sex dries up, et cetera, is because we're choosing bad partners. That's the number one reason, in my opinion. We're choosing the wrong partners. We're not using any criteria. We're like, yeah, she looks fit. All right. She's kind of nice to me. She laughs at my jokes. We have sex. She's pregnant. There's no rigid criteria that we're using. And that was the premise of my book. The premise of the book is, we're choosing bad partners, and as a result of choosing bad partners, our life sucks. Mm-hmm. We are miserable. We are super stressed. We literally are sick. Physically, we are sick. We make less money at work, and we die earlier as a result of choosing the bad partners. Mm-hmm. But when you get it right, that 20%, when you get it right, what do you get? You get backflips in the bedroom every week. You're healthier because you can fight off stress much better. You live longer. You make more money. There's countless studies that show how much more money you make when you have a strong partner. So that is the real reason, is that we are choosing bad partners. Now, to your point of sex drying up, the number one reason why we have sexual deficiency that happens in relationships, hands down, is stress. It's stress related. Now, it's not necessarily the stress that's happening between you and your partner or you and your kids. It could be the stress that your partner is having at work. And because you two can't, what's called co-regulate, right? If you have a strong partner, what they do is, any stress that you're dealing with in life at work, coming home on the tube, whatever it may be, your partner helps you to shield that stress and what was called co-regulate, get to a point where you can be at a healthy state, right? if you have a bad partner, what does a bad partner do? They magnify the stress. You got all that stress happening at work. You come home, it's 10 times worse, right? Now, that's the reason why we're not having sex to a large degree. That stress and anxiety leads to a lot of sexual dysfunction that happens, and it reduces emotional intimacy, which is required to have the highest levels of satisfaction of sex. So ultimately, I think it is stress and anxiety is the key, is a key driver.
Okay. That all makes sense. And I agree with the stress thing as well. And also when I can see myself and dad's coming home, and when you get home and you think, oh, and the stress like elevates, like I can see why that then goes on to, oh, sod this, let's just go to bed separately. Like it's fine. But what's your advice? I love the idea of what you're saying is prevention is better than cure, right? So really we should now, like my son, my daughter, I should be teaching them to choose the right partner, not just the first person that they quite like. So that's fine for him growing up. And if I can prevent him and her choosing the wrong partner, they're going to do better in life. So that's what parents, I think, should be doing with their kids, in line with your kind of stance on that. But what about the parents now who might be listening and going, oh crap, maybe I'm with the wrong person. Like, can that be fixed, or do they just kind of cut their losses and go and find someone else?
Yeah. And that's a great question that each individual needs to answer. I say this often because most of the people I work with are trying to enter a relationship, right? Almost, that's most of my work. And so they'll come to me and they'll say, Paul, I'm so lonely, right? I really need a partner. And I said, no. The worst thing in the world is to actually be in a relationship and still be alone. And this happens time and time again. So you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to tolerate? What are you willing to accept? Are you willing to accept a partner that's putting forth no effort? Are you willing to accept emotional abuse? Are you willing to accept physical abuse in your relationship? Or are you willing to accept mediocrity? Because I strongly believe that marriage is not for everyone, but we were not put on this planet to do life alone. And there is a partner or partners out there for everyone, for everyone. And so the first question becomes, well, what are you willing to accept? And that should then outline what your plan is. Now, I know a lot of people are not in position to hit eject immediately from their relationship because of children, because of financial entanglements, whatever it may be. You can't just leave, but you can at least begin to put the plan in place. Now, outside of what you can tolerate, the next question is, how focused are you on your well-being? This is the number one thing we can do before the relationship, in the relationship, after the relationship, is focus on our well-being. So in the book, one of, I think, the most important statistics, it was a study that I found that was done in the US that showed that the number one factor that goes into having a high satisfaction relationship is not values. It's not same level of education. It's not sexual compatibility. All those are still important, but you know what the number one determinant to you having a high satisfaction relationship is? What would you guess it is? Number one, by far, number one.
Well, only because you framed it, but I think what you're going to say is like self-esteem, self-worth, and self-value.
So it is, you're on the path, right? It is high well-being. So if you have what is considered high well-being, which is inclusive of self-esteem, self-acceptance, etc. If you have high well-being, then you enter a relationship. Not only do you enter it more likely to have another partner who has high well-being, but when you have high well-being, you're also able to push off all of the narcissists, psychopaths, etc., because they don't want to deal with you, because it's easier for them to deal with someone with low well-being because they can manipulate them. Yeah. So now that means you want to enter strong. Now, if you enter weak, you still want to build up strong, because strong is going to help to inspire your partner. Strong is going to help you to inspire others around, right, in your life. And have high well-being allows you to make better decisions around your life. So how do you get to strong well-being? The best measure of this, there's a doctor named Dr. Carol Riff out of the US. She is the OG of well-being. So in the 1980s, she read about all of the theologians of well-being, Carl Jung, Eric Erickson, Maslow, Aristotle, everybody you could think of, right? And she looked at all of their models and she put them together and she figured out what are the areas that all of these theologians around well-being, what are they saying that's the same? She created a game changer. It's called the 6 Dimensions of Psychological Well-being. It sounds very nerdy. 6 Dimensions of Psychological Well-being. Please, this is the game changer, okay? 6 Dimensions of Psychological Well-being. And she's identified 6 different areas that all we need to do is figure out how to become one step better in each category, and we will have a higher well-being. But if we're not progressively getting better in each of these 6 dimensions, then our well-being is going to drop. So what are the 6 dimensions? I'll give you a couple examples. One is called autonomy. Now, you think about autonomy, everyone's like, oh, that means I control my time. No. What autonomy means is that society is constantly placing pressure on us to dress a certain way, to show up a certain way, to post certain things on social, right? That's society's pressure. If we are truly autonomous, we hear all that, but we still move in our own direction.
Yeah.
Right? You got a Carhartt jacket on, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Can I say, Carhartt was hard in New York growing up. We used to wear the Carhartt, full, what do you call it? Like boiler suit Carhartts.
Yeah.
Hard, right? Now, Carhartt, for example, let's say nobody's rocking Carhartt anymore, which I see people are really doing it, but let's say nobody is. You saying, you know what? I like this jumper. I like this because yeah. I just like it, regardless of what everyone thinks. That's being autonomous. So how do you learn to be more autonomous? If you could become more autonomous, well-being goes up. Another one is called self-acceptance, which is kind of like self-esteem. The self-acceptance is, I know all of my demons. I know all of the things I shouldn't be doing. I know all of the deficiencies, but I still love myself anyway. I still accept myself, right? That's self-acceptance. It's deeper, I think, even than just saying self-worth. So she's got these 6 dimensions. So long story short, this is a super long story, but to make it short, is if we can identify each one of those 6 dimensions and work on those, whether we're in the relationship or before or after the relationship, that is the game changer. That's the game changer.
Yeah. So if you're in that position where you feel like you might not have the perfect partner, working on those 6 dimensions and both of you working on those 6 dimensions actually is going to improve things. Like whether it's still what you're willing to tolerate is another question, but it's certainly going to improve things to some degree.
Yeah, to some degree. And remember, your partner may not work on any, you know, and ultimately, in my opinion, if your partner is putting in no effort, then the relationship is over. Because a relationship, a marriage, is not 50-50, it's 100-100.
Yeah.
And some days, some days you need your partner to show up when you can't fully show up. And if you have someone that has stopped putting in effort and refuses, that means they have no interest in the relationship. And that's someone that then you have to decide, are you willing to tolerate being in a relationship with someone who doesn't care about it?
Yeah. I love that. I want to just segue slightly because one of the questions that came up, I think the answer is still the same thing we've just been discussing, but one of the questions that came up was from a single dad who asked, do women want to date a dad who's struggling with anxiety and depression? And if you are struggling with anxiety and depression, like, the thought of dating, like the, like you think, oh, it would be better if I'm dating someone, but you can't date someone because they're, because you're anxious and depressed. So, you know, those six dimensions are probably going to be very helpful for that dad who is thinking, I'm anxious and I'm depressed. But how can you move from that into dating? It's a big step.
Yeah. And this is a very fair question. And your advice is spot on, right? What we want more than anything. So, you know, I have 9 jobs, literally. So one of my jobs is I'm head of global research for Tinder. And so I'm able to look at data all around the world and I'm able to see what are people looking for in a partner. This is very important. What are they searching for? One of the top areas that we're searching for in a partner around the world, regardless of age, is we want someone who is comfortable in who they are and has what's considered to be high mental health. This is very important, especially as you go younger. This is more important than ever before because we know how traumatic the world can be. And so we need somebody who's going to be authentically them, right? Because we feel like we can trust someone who's at that level. So to your point, you want to work on anxiety. You want to work on depression prior to engaging in the relationship. Now, there's a myriad of ways this could be done. I would say therapy, counseling, very important. But also, let's keep it real. It's very hard to get a therapist or a counselor. You might be on a waiting list for 6 months, a year. Yeah. So it's very hard. So what can you do in the short term? Well, one of the key things that you could do in the short term, and this is, so Dr. Gabor Mate, you're probably very familiar with him, has written the Myth of Normal is his latest book. That book alone is a game changer around having traumatic events that spark anxiety or traumatic events that spark depression. Read that. Listen to the audio of that. My book, the first 2 chapters are about identifying trauma and attachment, because you could have a anxious attachment, which leads to a lot of anxiety. Identifying what those are and how do you heal from that? So I think my book would be another great resource. Ultimately, here's the quick notes of my book and Gabor's is it requires journaling, meditation, right? Work that allows you to feel present in a situation. But ultimately, the key is that you want to put people in your life who are very secure in their attachment. They do have high well-being. And ultimately, what they do is they begin to help you to reshape how you show up and reduce your anxiety. So just to have a buddy, a friend who is a good friend, which I will underscore, as men, we need these people in our lives today more than any point in history. I'm sure you're familiar with the 3 a.m. study.
I've heard of that, yeah.
So in the UK, for any of the listeners who are not familiar, in the UK and also in the US, in a lot of Western countries, there's surveys around how many 3 a.m. friends you have. So that is a person that you could call at 3 a.m. and they would stop what they're doing and pay full attention to you, come over to visit you, etc. When the studies have been done just within the last year, in the UK, women on average have 3 to 5 3 a.m. friends, which is down from what it was a few years ago. Men in the UK have 0 on average. And as we enter marriage, as we have children, as we get older, especially as men, our social circles shrink. And so to have the 3 a.m. friends is a direct correlation between our mental health. Because if we feel like we have no 3 a.m. friends, we feel like we are alone in this world. So how to do it is reading resources, meditation, journaling, becoming more present. But one of the most important is to put people in your life. They don't have to be romantic, platonic. People in your life who you can trust, who are secure. That is one of the most important strategies.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I know I don't want to take up too much of your time, although I could. I feel like I could sit next to you and ask you questions for a week solid. But I think I probably fall into the category sometimes of work and kids and you know, other bits and pieces that take up my attention and my time away from my wife. On Saturday, so today's Wednesday, on Saturday, we have got a very rare 4 or 5 hours in an evening with no kids. What shall I do?
Oh, man. You know what? This is where you have the conversation. And you, because if it's, it sounds like this is rare, right? So you don't get this often. So you have to have a conversation and talk to her about, well, what would you like to do? You know, what often happens is we assume that what we need to do is we need to surprise our partner and we need to pull out all the balloons and right. But maybe your partner is going through a tough time and would like to just sit on a couch and watch Netflix and eat pizza, right? Or maybe they want to go out and see Les Mis, you know, on the West End. It's like, have the conversation, and then within the conversation or within the event, you could pack in your surprises. But it's important to have the conversation. But I'll say the larger point is you must build this time in. You must. Because on Tinder, one of the fastest growing demographics of new daters is 50-year-olds. Now, you know why 50-year-olds is the number one growing? Because they've spent their entire life with their partner and their kids, and they've spent all of their time and energy on their children and their work, just trying to pay the bills and their kids. And they spent no time nurturing their relationship. And they get to 50, the kids go up, leave the house, and they say, I don't even know you. We haven't talked about anything. Like, I don't know what your dreams are, your passions are. I don't know you. And then they separate, right? How do you stop that from happening? You have to build in time through the week. You have to prioritize your relationship. You must.
Okay. No, I like that. That's, yeah, I need, yeah, it's very, yeah. Our problem is that like my youngest, he's got attachment to us. So getting him to go with even grandparents who are local and very willing to help it's difficult. So then we trying to get him to go to his grandparents is stress inducing for us. So by the time we've dropped him off, we're both kind of fed up and just want to go to bed. But yeah. then think, oh, we need to go out. But I think we need to persevere.
Yeah, yeah. And also too, is he at school yet or no?
Yeah. He's 9.
He's 9. Okay. So then it's one of those where you build it in as much as you can during the day.
Yeah.
Quick lunches. And you know, the research bears this out is every 2 weeks, there should be something that just you and your partner are doing exclusively, even if it is just 30 minutes. And the beauty is that it's something that you can also look forward to as a partnership.
Yeah.
You know, I know next 2 weeks on Wednesday, that's our time. And then the beauty there is that it becomes a space not only for you to share dreams and passions and laughs and all of those things, but it's a space for you to continue to re-fall in love with each other. Because that's ultimately, you want it to keep the romanticism alive in your relationship. You need to have those experiences where you still get a little giddy. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to go to dance class together. Like, it's like, oh, no, I've never, you know, I want to make sure that I'm looking good. Like, you want those experiences. So definitely, definitely build those in.
Okay. No, I like that. Paul, this has been brilliant. Like, so I feel like I need to go and listen to all this back and actually start unpicking it, probably in the context of having your book open next to the conversation as well. We'll make sure that we share the link to the book. But thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us and all of that wisdom. Incredible. A Dad's Net Original Podcast.